Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889. From WWNO New Orleans and our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. The Louisiana restaurant scene has never been hotter. On this week's show, we're touring some special eateries that should be on your radar. First, John Besh and Aaron Sanchez reveal the genesis of their collaboration at Johnny Sanchez, a restaurant that not only combines their two names, but also reflects their culinary sensibilities. Then, we travel to Shreveport to visit Marilyn's Place, a quirky, artsy spot where you never know when a party will spontaneously break out. Finally, we'll head down to one of the hottest new restaurant destinations in the state, New Orleans' Bywater neighborhood. Wait till you hear what's new down there. We're eating our way around the state on this week's Louisiana Eats. Aaron Sanchez and John Besh have made a big stir with their restaurant, Johnny Sanchez. Aaron and John each have had their own successful restaurants, cookbooks, and TV careers. Combining two superstar talents like this could result in an abundance of egos in the kitchen, but not with these two. Why? Because quite simply, they're best buds.
You know what's really funny? This is, you know, he's the only Marine and chef who doesn't have a damn tattoo. And the thing is, like,
if and I see that really pisses him off. Actually.
And if I see another young cook with a pig tattoo, I'm gonna puke in my mouth. Like that kind of way. It's like, does that give you all of a sudden street cred? Like you're a bad chef because I got a pig tattoo. We all know pigs tasty. I don't know what this guy's been doing his whole life. But what's wrong with a Marine tattoo? Well, you know what I mean?
I was gonna ask if you were gonna have a tattoo put on John. What would it be?
I don't know, you know.
Maybe. I think the Eagle, Globe, and Anchor.
Yep, yeah. The Eagle, Globe, and Anchor. Something that would...
USMC.
Yep. You know, something that...
Definitely not a pig tattoo, because I wouldn't want you getting sick every time you saw it.
Yeah, I don't want to... Yeah. I get nauseous around you as it is.
I see these young fellas come in with, like, bacon all over them. And
or beets. Or, like, stupid stuff like...
Food is love and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, gosh.
And the worst one is the knife. Like, oh, all of a sudden I'm tough because I have a knife tattoo.
That's Aaron Sanchez hamming it up with John Besh at Johnny Sanchez, a restaurant whose moniker, style, and menu all reflect the two chefs' personalities. They've both achieved national acclaim in the fine dining field, but now they're embracing their heritage in bold new ways.
Yeah, we just want every little detail to be just so perfect in a way that I haven't experienced before. Like, and it sounds weird saying that. I mean, I love the fact that August is where it is and that Dominica is wonderful and this and that, blah, blah, blah. But the stakes are raised here. And then having Aaron's name, for some reason, it's kind of like elevated my, you know, the tension. Like, it's got to be perfect. It's got to be perfect.
And the idea is that this is an expression of two friends and two chefs' idea and love for something that's so genuine and it's so personal and intimate to me, because that's the way I grew up, and we're honoring and celebrating my grandmother and we're celebrating my mom. And then you have...
Probably more so here than in any restaurant that you've ever done.
Because, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I grew up here wanting to be more than just the local kid. I wanted to be more than just the traditional New Orleans chef that I grew up with. In the same way that Aaron's kind of like pushed away from his mother. His mother is such a huge figure. She became the ambassador, really, in many ways, for true Mexican cooking years ago with James Beard and you know, Paul Prudhomme and that whole crowd. And And so he's kind of pushed away from that. Now we're both at this point where I embrace the fact that I'm from here and I love here. And, you know, like the same way that Aron's kind of going through that same stage where, you know what, he's embracing his mother and those old recipes and the old ideas and the things that his grandmother passed down. And so when he's making that mole, I mean, the mole has got to be just perfect. And Poppy, I don't know the first thing about it. Like, I know it tastes good. I know, you know, I know it's very complex. I know it takes time. But he'll go in there and, you know, he's just like a scientist just working on these recipes one after the next. And what's really cool is I'm trying to set the table and set the circumstances around him so that they're just so that we can give him the support to really, like, extract all that good stuff, extract all those great recipes and those memories and turn that into food.
Yeah. And for me, it's like John brings, obviously, this training and this skill set that I wasn't trained that way. I didn't grow up that way. But there's a commonality in the idea of that community around food and making that an impact on our community is what we're dedicated to. And one thing that I've learned from this endeavor and this exercise is knowing that we are two different chefs, two different men, but we have the same goal, and that's to be the best. And I want my son to play with the best boys. I want me to be around people that I cared about. And the thing I'm thinking about so much lately, I was like, what's keeping me in New York? Why am I there? Am I having the experiences, the spontaneous moments that I have in New Orleans there? And I'm not. And I'm not around people that uplift me and I'm learning from. And every time I'm with John, I'm learning.
And I love you, man.
No, I'm serious, baby. And you know it's true. And,
no,
I tell you that all the time.
The interior of Johnny Sanchez is split into two designs, one that looks like the iconic architecture of New Orleans, while the other is an homage to Aron's vibrant Mexican heritage and his tattooed body.
Just the idea of the way that people eat all over Mexico is not that very different than how we eat here in New Orleans. It's all about friends, it's all about family, it's all about breaking bread together, and it's about community. Yeah, we come at food, I think, with the same intention, but from totally different areas. And so I like want to always refine. Aron comes in the other day and he's like, "Who made this? A bunch of white boys made this?" And he's like, long story short, he takes all these onions, these beautiful white bulb onions, and just drops them in the coals and like chars them and burns them, and then the tomatillas on top of that and all of this, and it looks like a charred mess. And then he takes that and throws it together and then purees the entire thing, and he's like, "Now this is how you make a salsa." And I'm like, "Okay, forget everything I've ever said about how to cook or why to cook and blah blah blah." And all the cooks and myself were just watching and all like, "Did he really just do that?"
That's why we differ, because you know, I want to do 35 different dishes because, you know, there's 32 states in Mexico and I want all these dishes to have a place. And John's like, whoa, slow down. Let's let them get this executed properly. And I'm like, "No, baby, but we got to make tamales and huitlacoche today."
We are doing the huitlacoche tamales right now, actually. We're steaming them as we speak.
So that kind of stuff for me, because it's like, boom, boom, I can think of all these dishes and I'm like, people need to eat that. And John's like, "Well, let's let them execute this properly first. And then once we get that, I promise you, Aron, we'll blow this menu out. We'll do all these fun dishes."
I was kind of curious if you have the Hispanic community in New Orleans responding to this, and are you finding folks here who can cook your food or want to?
For me, the biggest joy I get in what I do is when I walk into any kitchen in America, you know, and I travel a bunch and I do shows and all this kind of silly stuff. But when I go to a kitchen, then the Mexican guys, and the majority of them are the people that run the kitchen.
Outside of New Orleans, almost all the cooks in America are Mexican, right?
So when they see me, they're like, "I'm their guy. He looks like me, he speaks my language, he understands my narrative and where I've been, and he has that." So that's a huge amount of responsibility. It's something I take extremely serious, and I have to make myself available to engage with those people so they know if you want this, you can get it. You know what I mean? And for me, that's a huge thing. And it's a little bit of challenging here, to be honest.
So you're still looking for those people.
We've got a bunch of them. Yeah. We have a bunch of great people. I think that I would say 50% of the kitchen are Mexican immigrants that have come here and that are back there just and so proud that they get to work with and for Oron, and also that they get to cook their food. Not just replicating somebody else's recipe, but Oron's engaging these chefs and saying, okay, well, how would you do this? Because this is what I want. Like the sopes, you know, this little grandmother in the kitchen, she was making the sopes this morning. I said, well, do you ever, like, do you puree the corn? She says, no, I never puree the corn because she says with the starch, it makes it, it gives it a bad texture. She grates the corn on a box grater, and which I've never heard of before. And, you know, that's, but it's just these little tidbits of information that gives an authenticity to the food. And I hate that word authentic because life is this great evolution and people come, people go, and people add a little, you know, to the proverbial gumbo pot. But what's beautiful about this restaurant and about Oron and that heritage is he's really engaging the local Mexican community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they've made our food better.
And we live a blessed life, honestly, because we're forming people's perspective and something that's so honest and genuine to us. And I think that is really the gift that we've been given.
Chefs Aaron Sanchez and John Besh at their restaurant, Johnny Sanchez.
You can. Such a long, long way back home.
As the 2016 winner of the James Beard Award for Best New Restaurant, Alon Shaya has come a long way since he first learned to cook as a child growing up in an Israeli family. First, Alon established himself in New Orleans as John Besh's collaborating partner at their Italian hotspot, Dominica. His culinary talent and strong-rooted sense of Israeli cuisine led him to open a new restaurant that transforms the many flavors of the Hebrew diaspora that now converge in present-day Israel. We sat down with Alon at Shaya to learn what inspired the restaurant's amazing menu and explain what the Israeli food tradition means to him.
I was born in Israel. My mother is Israeli and my father is Romanian and my grandparents are Bulgarian. So when I was four, my family immigrated to Philadelphia and that's where I grew up. Finally landed in New Orleans in 2003 and just fell head over heels for it and really called it my home right away. And I've never had any thoughts of leaving since I got dropped off in New Orleans.
And you get dropped off in like a perfect place because somehow you ended up in the same spot with our dear buddy, Chef John Besh, and
yeah.
The rest from there is history, huh?
Yeah. So John and I met in 2003 and I was the chef de cuisine for Besh Steak for a couple of years and then Katrina hit and then we got through all that and got the steakhouse reopened and then just like most people during Katrina, did a lot of soul searching and really kind of asking myself, where do I really want to do in life? I had always cooked Italian food. It was always a huge passion of mine. And the reason I started cooking Italian food, I feel, in Philadelphia when I was in high school was because I was reminded a lot of those flavors that I loved so much of the food that I grew up eating, the roasted eggplants and peppers and goat cheese and olive oil and garlic and all the things that, you know, the Israeli food is so wonderful for. I saw a lot of that in Italian food and I was just drawn to it. So after Katrina, I moved to Italy and spent a year living in Italy, working with families, you know, living above the restaurant, working downstairs. And came back in 2009 and opened Dominica in partnership with John.
And what was really great about Domenica is that even though it was an Italian restaurant and still is an Italian, then next thing you know, you have Pizza Domenica, the second one. On special occasions, you just really showed your Israeli roots off and cooked Seder supper and cooked Hanukkah supper.
Yeah.
And you always had this very strong Jewish outreach with the food, even though you were in an Italian restaurant.
Sure. Yeah, because, you know, it was special to me. Just like I love cooking Thanksgiving meals. It's one of my favorite things of the year to cook. I love cooking for Hanukkah and for Passover and for Rosh Hashanah. So we started doing these meals at Domenica and got such a great response. Hundreds of people would show up to come and taste this food. So naturally, I was like, okay, people like this stuff. Let's see if I can take it, you know, and really continue to push the limits with this. And I found right before Shia opened that Domenica's menu started looking more and more like an Israeli restaurant. So I was like, oh no, I need an outlet for this. I really do. So I know that there are some, you know, there's chefs in the country that are cooking amazing Middle Eastern food or cooking amazing, you know, Greek or Moroccan food. And I love the fact that we can kind of pick and pool a lot of those things together and put them together into one story on a menu. I kind of feel like I have an idea of how people like to eat and what food gets people excited. And it always has to start with that for me. And one of the perfect examples is our kibbeh. And kibbeh is usually a combination of ground beef and lamb, and we serve the raw version, the kibbeh. We put ground walnuts, bulgur wheat, mint, pomegranate molasses, preserved lemon. All that gets mixed into this tartare. And then we serve that with this Yemenite flatbread called malawach. And that is like, imagine taking like croissant dough and just like roasting it in clarified butter in a saute pan,
oh,
you know, like
gracious.
it puffs up and it gets really golden brown and crispy and buttery and flaky.
You're making me weak in my knees.
So the kibbeh is very Lebanese, the malawach is very Yemenite, but those two cultures are cooking for each other now in Israel. That's the way that I kind of think about the food, and it allows me to be really creative without overstretching the creativity and then the food kind of not making any sense.
And the first time I came to see you here at Shia, you just could hardly wait to show off your new toy.
Well, we have a beautiful wood-burning oven that is in the corner of our dining room that produces the fluffiest, hottest, most crispy pita bread that I've ever had. And, you know, the pita, everybody asks me, what's my favorite thing on the menu? And I say the pita bread. Because we've all had bad pita bread before.
Yes, we have.
You know what I'm talking about, right? It's that, like, two layers of recycled UPS cardboard that's put in a Ziploc bag. You know, we make our dough, of course, from scratch, and we allow it to age and slow proof, and it puffs up, and it has this big steamy pocket on the inside. So when you rip it apart at the table, you know, it's like hot, it's crispy on the outside, it's soft on the inside. And then the menu is really built to eat with pita. Like,
right.
That's the way to go. So the whole middle section of the menu is all 10 different little salads and spreads that are constantly going to be changing throughout the seasons. And if you order those, and the pita bread will automatically come, and then you just start to dip and spread and spoon some of this on the bread and dip some of that into the pita and then pass it around the table and try different combinations. That really is what I feel like creates the identity for the restaurant.
Alon Shia, chef and owner of the James Beard award-winning restaurant, Shia. What makes that extra virgin olive oil extra virgin? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What makes extra virgin olive oil extra virgin? Extra virgin olive oil is the juice that comes from the very first pressing of the olives. That makes it the very best of the olive oils. It's usually deep green in color and has a very fresh, almost sweet flavor of olives. Extra virgin olive oil is the only cooking oil made without the use of chemicals and industrial refining. After the first pressing, it can't legally be called virgin. That's because with each continued extraction, the quality lessens. The lowest grade is called pomace, which is often treated with heat and chemicals to get that last precious bit of oil out of the mash. Pomace is also the cheapest. But pomace has a very high smoke point, so if you're frying with olive oil, pomace is your best bet. But for your salad, break out that extra virgin. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Chris Jay covers the food scene in the northern part of our delicious state. He blogs about food at 20by49.com, and he's also our Louisiana Eats roving reporter. Chris, great to see you again.
It's great to be here, Poppy. Thanks for having me back.
What are we eating today?
You know, let's just assume it's Sunday morning, okay? Let's get that out of the way first. It's Sunday morning in Shreveport. There is one place you have got to experience, and that is Maryland's Place. It's a walk-up, you know, restaurant you can walk or bike to from several surrounding areas. And it used to be a gas station, but it's been converted into this really fun Cajun and Creole restaurant that's run by a chef named Boz Balcom. Boz cooked for 20 years aboard a Carnival Cruise Line ship, and he decided to move back to Shreveport-Bossier. He was born there and learned to cook in New Orleans. And he cooked in New Orleans for about 10 years as well. But that Sunday brunch is absolutely insane. It's an unhinged kind of experience. If you're looking for a Sunday morning that's basically a continuation of Saturday night, this is where to find it. He calls it drink till you drown, but he's also going to serve up some wonderful food while you're enjoying the $15 all-you-can-drink cocktails that begin at 10 a.m.
Yeah, Stephen Peterson, and here at Maryland's Eatery, one of Highland's prime cafes. It's probably the top place people like to meet and socialize. There's a few places that need to pick up the slack in between the 2 to 8 p.m. hours that could continue on. We all dream of having a real Sunday fun day, but Maryland's is definitely the kickoff point. Well, I've been here 2 years, and I found out about Maryland's within the first summer. And once I realized just how affordable and nice the place was and that you could bike and walk, no problem. I mean, this is a no-brainer for me.
So what are those cocktails he's serving? Probably Bloody Marys, mimosas, screwdrivers.
Absolutely. Yes.
I'm Barry Butler, and I've been coming here for probably the past three and a half years. And it's all you can drink, mimosas, Madras, Bloody Marys. Yeah, some beer involved in there. Great Raft, have to plug them. This is definitely the tribal hangout, or as we like to call it, church. Well, just being honest there.
It's also a really progressive and fun place. For example, when marriage equality was, you know, passed on a federal level, his was the one restaurant that said, come here, we're throwing a huge party. And there must have been 700 people. They were spilling out into the parking lot. It was complete insanity. And he was handing out free drinks. He was in a great, great mood that day. And it was really nice to see a local restaurant say, let's celebrate this right now. Come to Maryland's Place. We're going to party.
Well,
Tell me about the food that we're washing down with all these cocktails.
It's sort of like a big Southern comfort food twist on Cajun and Creole. So his crawfish etouffee, his jambalaya, these biscuits and boudin specials that he runs, things like that may be sort of unrecognizable, for example, to people from southwestern Louisiana. They may kind of think, well, this is a little bit modified take on some of our classics. And he absolutely wears that on his sleeve. He wants it to be bigger, richer, comfort food versions of Cajun and Creole classics.
Yum. Okay. Well, as usual, I'm hungry. Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's make sure it's a Sunday when we go and we can hit that bar too.
If 3, 4, 5 of us are gathered in the name of Maryland's, it's a good, good thing.
That's Chris J., our Louisiana Eats roving reporter. Recently, the Louisiana Eats crew hit the road to get to know some new restaurants in the Bywater neighborhood.
What do we want?
We began our tour at Pizza Delicious, a popular spot a block away from the Mississippi River, where a variety of different diners were seated chowing down on garlic knots and slices of thin crust pizza.
I mean, I like that.
So, we would like to have a margarita.
Okay.
And a Amphi pale ale.
We ordered my favorite, a 16-inch margarita, and sat down with co-owner Michael Friedman to discuss his journey from pop-up to popular restaurateur.
So I'm Michael Friedman, and with my partner Greg Algarden, we are the two owners of Pizza Delicious down in the Bywater. I came to New Orleans 11 years ago to go to Tulane University. Freshman move-in day for my residence, I trained to be an RA. My sophomore year was also evacuation day for Hurricane Katrina. That was an interesting twist to my New Orleans experience. I was here a year before the storm and came back, was anxious to get back, finished up school, and Greg was my roommate towards the end of college, and we just kind of always lamented the state of pizza in New Orleans, both being native New Yorkers, and we had this idea, we're like, hey, if we start making pizza and it's good, people might show up. And we had no idea how many people would. We started this pop-up right down in the Bywater, a few blocks from where we are now. And it was amazing. We were just doing Sunday nights. We had a pay-as-you-go cell phone, and we only did to-go advance orders of pizza. And within a couple months, it just exploded. We ended up doing that for like 2.5 years. People just kind of encouraging us to open up a brick and mortar. We started looking, and did not want to leave the neighborhood because the neighborhood had just been so supportive. There's so many people living here who are just dying for different types of food. So we looked and looked and looked and found this warehouse in the Bywater and just kind of went for it. We didn't know much about what we were doing, but we knew our pizza was pretty good at that point, and that's what kind of carried us through.
You know, a lot of cynical people will say to me, over 1,000 new restaurants in New Orleans since Hurricane Katrina? Well, when's the attrition coming? Surely that many restaurants can't be supported. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think we have always wondered, it's just continued to get busier and busier when we've opened, and we're always like, okay, when's this gonna taper off? Surely everyone's come to the Bywater already, like, they've had their experience, like it's nice, and it just seems like more and more and more people just keep coming to the area. People have heard of us, heard of this neighborhood, never really ventured out here. And the most surprising part to me has just been tourism in the past couple of years has just been, I mean, we get tourists like in here coming, walking from the quarter who read that like this is a cool neighborhood, like you really can't experience New Orleans without a trip to the Bywater, which is super cool. I mean, it's really cool for us. We had, you know, a table of Brits in here the other day, and I'm like, how did you find out about this place? You know, like, how did, and they're like, we heard it was really great. You know, someone told us it was awesome. We walked in the 95 degree weather from the quarter to get to your restaurant.
And eat some pizza.
Yeah, it's like, I love that. You know, it's so cool.
What is your favorite time of day down here? What's your favorite part of being right here at Crescent Park at Pizza Delicious?
I love a couple of things. I would say the weekends are really, really cool, just during the day when people finally wake up from their hangovers and are finally getting out and are just, it's become such a great area to walk around in. There's a lot of families in this neighborhood now, which is very, very cool. And so it's just like peeking my head out into the street and just seeing how many people are just walking around. There's little art markets that's set up. And so I love weekend days. And also at night when it just kind of gets, when there are like plays going on, there's a lot of reasons for people to be in the area. And it's just kind of like bustling around the neighborhood. And I'm like, this was not happening a few years ago. It's really, really cool. It's exciting for us. I mean, getting a huge like late night drunk rush of people is so gratifying. We feel happy to provide that service.
Describe what makes your pizza so delicious. And, you know, I think I have to have a piece of pizza.
I was going to say, don't let your pizza get too cold.
It's killing me. What's the experience like when you come here as a customer, and what makes your pizza so good?
Well, we make New York-style pizza, which was something that we were having a hard time finding down here. I'm watching you eat it right now. You're doing the right thing, folding the crust. We have big 18-inch, sometimes even 20-inch pies, depending on how we make them. And the reason they vary is because we hand-toss every single one of them, make all our dough here, make all of our sauce here, make as many toppings here as we can. And so we just get really, really into making a really good slice of pizza because it's what we grew up eating.
Is Pizza Delicious a standalone experience in the Bywater, or might we see it someplace else one day?
It's a very good question. We get it a lot, which is flattering. As of right now, we just want to keep this one place going. We love it so much, and we want the food to be always great and always on point, and want it to be consistent. And it's tough, you know, with the volume that we end up doing. And so we'll see. We'll see. We have an open mind, but we just kind of want to enjoy what we're doing right now and really, really love being where in this neighborhood and keeping it going.
Bravo, Mike Friedman, for turning the pizza world of New Orleans around. And thank you so much for having us at Pizza Delicious today.
Thank you so much for coming down here. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Michael Friedman of Pizza Delicious. When Tobias Womack and Amy Mossberger moved to New Orleans 2 years ago, they had one simple goal in mind: to open up a restaurant that filled some existing gap in the culinary scene. Having been trained at the wildly popular Mission Chinese on the Lower East Side of New York, an idea sparked when they noticed what they considered to be a lack of Chinese cuisine in the Crescent City. Like so many others in the past 10 years, Tobias and Amy settled along St. Claude Avenue in the Bywater and started a pop-up delivery service that eventually evolved into the brick-and-mortar restaurant, now known as Red's Chinese.
Amy and myself have a similar palate. We both like very spicy, sour, sweet, bitter, funky, fermented foods. And we were eating a lot of Vietnamese cuisine. We were at Dong Phong and Pho Tao Bay and all these wonderful local Vietnamese restaurants. And then we'd go and we'd mix it up and we'd go and have Chinese food. And there's a lot of wonderful Chinese restaurants, but not what we were looking for. We wanted that Korean, that Japanese. We wanted the exotic, and we knew how we could. We knew that we could do that. We could take the Asian cuisine and make it a little bit more authentic and a little weirder.
Tobias, why did you and Amy decide to come to New Orleans?
Love. Love that the city shares, it has shared historically with food, with tradition, with culture, with music, with cuisine. And New Orleans is very open and receptive to people that are willing to embrace the city. I've never felt like people were like, "Oh, you're from New York. You know, you're a carpetbagger, or you know, you're a bad person. You're a gentrifier." Nobody's ever said those words to me on both sides of the street.
Why did you decide to open in the Bywater? Why was this your spot?
A total happenstance. We found an apartment on Clouette Street, and we started branching out from the apartment and looking for places to rent and to work, to build a business. So we went down St. Cloud and we passed this building late one night, and there was like some rough remnants of like an old commercial history to it. You know, it kind of felt like it might have been a convenience store at one time, or it might have been a restaurant. And we kind of like peeked through this little hole in the window, and we saw that there was a kitchen. And then we started a dialogue with the people upstairs, and sure enough, they gave me the landlord's number, and the landlord turned out to be totally open to what we wanted to do, and we were blown away that they would even consider our zany idea of opening a Chinese restaurant. And they're like, "Yeah, right, come on. You guys, you're going to do Chinese food?"
But you start off in the delivery business. So what was that about, Tobias?
The delivery business was done out of our laundry room.
Your laundry room?
Laundry room, yeah. We literally got 3 propane tanks and some camp stoves and a big fan and set it up in our laundry room. We didn't have the funds and we didn't have the space to begin with to open a proper restaurant, but we wanted to be independent and we wanted to give back to the community and start something. We knew that we could do that here, so we just said, "All right, let's do it." We made the flyers and just we papered the whole neighborhood. And it was a Tuesday. Me and Amy were sitting in the kitchen, staring at the phone, and we're like, "Is it going to ring?" And we're like looking at each other, and we're like, and then the phone rang. We couldn't believe it. We're like, "Hello," and somebody else was on the end of the line. They're like, "Hi, can I get some Chinese food?" We're like, "Yeah. What would you like?"
That's a really great beginning to a food business. That's awesome. Now that you've actually got a front door that people walk through, what's the reaction now?
The reaction is good. I think people had really high expectations because of Mission Chinese from me and Amy. What's been really great is that we get older couples and we get families that come into the restaurant. That's like, you know, and we get a lot of Vietnamese people that come in too. And that's like, that's awesome for me. That's really cool. It's not just young people with their cool haircuts and their rad shirts. I wish I had more energy and we could stay open later on Monday nights so that we could accommodate all the chefs and all the restaurateurs and all the servers and bussers and bartenders and really like make their life way more hospitable on their day off. It's big portions, it's affordable, it's a relaxed environment, and that's key for us, you know. And nobody else is really open on Mondays too. That's another thing, is like everyone's closed in this neighborhood. So we stayed open to accommodate for the restaurant industry and for all the staff, you know. There's no great like Red's Chinese mission statement, you know. At the end of the day, we're just trying to make really good food and make it in a comfortable environment. That's it.
Tobias Womack, chef and co-owner at Red's Chinese. When we come back from a short break, Gambit editor Kevin Allman will join us with the inside scoop on a hot new hip Bywater restaurant that's so underground, it's a good bet you've never heard of it. You don't want to miss this. So don't go anywhere. When you were young, and your excitement showed. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets
and from Ralph's on the Park, where this summer you can choose from over a dozen of Chef Chip Flanagan's inventive small plates and sip a glass of wine for an affordable, light, seasonal meal overlooking the lush foliage and towering oaks of City Park at 900 City Park Avenue in New Orleans' mid-city. If you're looking to visit the hottest restaurants in New Orleans, you'd be wise to talk to Kevin Allman, editor of Gambit Magazine. We recently spoke with Kevin about one of the newest, trendiest restaurants in the Bywater that you've probably never heard of. Kevin, I am so happy that I was able to get you to sit down with us and share some really amazing restaurant scoop that you've got for us. Something new in the New Orleans Bywater scene.
In the Bywater, yeah.
And God knows the Bywater scene, everything down there is like growing by leaps and bounds. I can hardly keep up. Can you?
No, because if you haven't been down there for a week, there's going to be something different, whether it's going to be a new restaurant, a new chef, a new menu, something like that going on. And with the influx of all the new people that have come here since the storm, that seems to be a place that a lot of them have settled. Some of them are really riffing on our tradition. Some of them have brought in their own traditions. But I think most of them are trying to combine the two. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's always interesting.
Well, you guys at Gambit always have the scoop. So what's new, Kevin?
Well, we just ran a review of a new restaurant. It's called No. It's pronounced No, but it's actually spelled, and this is all lowercase, N:EAUX. So it's like O, water, but it's No. And the first No that comes at No is that you can't make a reservation there.
Oh, I hate that.
Well, no, this is different than that. It's not, you don't wait in line. If you want to eat there, they make the reservation with you. You go online and you fill out this web form and it asks you a few questions and you put in your credit card number and links to your Twitter and your Tumblr and your social media accounts and they look it over. I don't know what criteria they use to decide how cool you are, but if they like it, then they'll text you back the time and the date that they will seat you. And then from there, you have to actually download a smartphone app and they have it for iPhone or Android. And that app is going to be an integral part of your dining experience while you're at No.
Wow. You have to really, really, really want to eat there, I suppose, to put up with all this. But I'm game. I'm always game for what's new. So you get lucky enough to make the cut and they tell you when to be there and where to go.
Right. And you download the app, which has your menu on it, and you go in and you don't go to the dining room first, even if you've got a reservation. You go into the bar and the bar is pitch black.
No, I've been in some dark bars.
No. This is like blackout curtains. This is like World War II blackout.
Okay.
And you are not allowed to speak because they want everyone to really experience the drinks themselves. So you can't see the drinks. You're not talking to the people that you're with. These things are just put in your hand. And they've got a pretty amazing drinks program. They have something called a Ramazarak French 75, which is a hybrid. It's got whiskey, gin, champagne, Morgan City Farms lemon juice, and the white of an egg from a Marigny free-range chicken. There's also something called an English turnip for what, and that's kind of a dealer's choice thing. All they'll tell you is that every week that it's going to be Mississippi River forward, and I'm not quite sure what that means as far as tasting goes.
Is it brown?
I don't know because it's dark in there. You can't see what you're drinking. But the drinks, they're in these big, giant kind of igloo coolers, and they pour them into red Solo cups with poetry written on the side, which you can read when you go into the dining room. And this is new. They actually have an artisanal ice menu at this place. So, and that's part of what you download on your app. So you can select the kind of ice cubes you want, if you want smoked ice or if you want chipped ice and all this. And the ice cubes range from $1 to $5 a piece.
You pay extra for ice cubes?
Well, it's an ingredient in the drink, as they've told me.
Okay.
And you pay for the ingredients that you're eating. You know, it's not just like some piece of ice that you get out of a
you're
machine.
Right.
These are
you're
special.
Right.
So,
I'm sorry.
And then you're taking it into the restaurant itself. Which is this long, 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 like football field size long table with just one person on each side. So it is communal dining, basically, but for hundreds of people. And you're not allowed to sit with the people that you came with because they want to encourage, as they say, community. People from Brooklyn and Portland are really big on community and all of that. Also, to build community, they don't have enough utensils for everyone. And
what?
That's by design.
Okay.
And there aren't traditional servers either. So as I said, they decide what you're going to eat. And when your meal is ready, your app buzzes in your pocket like you might get the buzzer at Zia's or something like that when the food's ready. And you walk into the kitchen and they call it foraging. There's a bunch of food out there and you have to find what you've ordered. And it's just like, you know, foraging, which is a term that we've all come to know since the storm.
This takes it to a new level.
If you happen to be picking up an order or you see someone picking up an order that looks good, in order to build more community, you offer to exchange bites of your food and all of this stuff. So they really want to get people talking in the kitchen. And I think it cuts down on labor costs too.
So what's the food like, this precious food?
The food, it varies from time to time. I've only been lucky enough to get in there once. So, I mean, you might talk to Ian McNulty or Brett Anderson because I think they've been there a lot more often than I have.
Okay.
But they don't divide it into entrees and mains and things like that. They have things they call excitements, amusements, and distractions.
Distractions?
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the difference between any of them are, frankly. But
were you distracted?
I was definitely distracted. The night I went, I had... you know what tofurkey is, right?
Of
it's like
course.
Turkey, but it's made out of tofu.
Yes.
And pork belly is really hot. So they had a tofurkey belly sandwich. And it was finished in a reduction of pineapple Big Shot and Pabst Blue Ribbon. And they served it like a banh mi, which is very popular these days, as we all know.
Of course.
And then the sandwich itself was crusted with Roman candy from the Roman Candy Man and Zapp's chips. So it was very local.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They also had what they call the deconstructed shrimp po' boy, which is kind of like spa cuisine. And it was a single breaded shrimp on this huge, huge square plate with a smear of Creole tomato jam and what they called Bogalusa Farms iceberg lettuce foam. So I guess you dip the shrimp in the tomato jam and then the iceberg lettuce foam.
Okay.
And of course, kale, you know, is huge, huge, huge these days. And I did not try this because I don't care for kale.
Uh-huh.
And I don't care for people who care for kale, but their most popular dish, and I think it's on the menu just about every night, is called the Flight of Six Kales. And it's kale prepared five different ways, but it's served on an edible plank actually made out of kale.
I'd like to see that.
It's a very smooth experience at the end, too. I mean, we're all used to Uber now and things like that, where you just get out of the car and you don't have to pay anyone. You don't have to pay when you leave here because you've already arranged that when you get there. So when you're finished, you just walk out and catch your Uber or whatever you're going to do. And the app that you downloaded on your phone automatically deducts the cost of your meal. And if you have Bitcoin, it takes it out of your Bitcoin account.
Okay.
It adds a 35% tip, which I guess is standard for them. And
wow.
It sends all the images of everything you've eaten to your Instagram and Snapchat accounts. And then it leaves the restaurant a 5-star Yelp review, so you don't even have to worry about doing that.
Well, that's a little nervy.
Well, that's you know, I guess
the future, huh?
That's the future. That's the future. So, yeah, that's no. And
okay. Well, I'm going to get back with you about this, Kevin.
Well,
if they'll let me in.
Well, they don't have a listed phone number and they don't have a listed address. That's the tough part. So you've just got to go online and maybe Google it or maybe go to Yelp and see if you can find someone who's been lucky enough to get in there and experience all this.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Poppy, for having us.
That's Kevin Allman of Gambit Magazine. Okay, full disclosure. That interview was, if you haven't already guessed, a satire. The restaurant, no, exists only in Kevin's imagination. But who knows? Maybe the trend of drinking quietly in a pitch dark room will catch on. I'm Poppy Tooker, and this is Louisiana Eats. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us next week when we indulge in a nip of the green fairy with Ray Bordelon and his brother BJ, whose collection of absinthe antiques is currently on long-term loan to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum.
What we have in the museum is part. Right now, the underside of my bed is completely filled with absinthe glasses.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's.
Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau, by Tableau, Dickie Brennan's latest restaurant serving local Creole cuisine with a view of Jackson Square, and by Toujac's Restaurant, home of America's oldest stand-up bar, now celebrating 160 years on Decatur Street. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.